Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
Pure Hoops Podcast, BJ Armstrong in LA, Eric Newman in New York, and we are 1 week into the NBA bubble. It has been exciting. It's been entertaining. There's ball on all day. I'm not watching it right now because I get to record with you. So, my man, before we get into a few specifics, what are your initial takeaways from week one in the Orlando NBA bubble?
Well, the thing that stands out to me is how competitive the games are. There's a real sense of urgency, especially from those teams on the outside currently looking in, trying to be one of those eight teams. And, you know, that's especially out there on the West Coast. You're looking at Phoenix. You're looking at Portland. And those teams are really playing with a sense of urgency. New Orleans, those teams are playing hard. They're trying to figure out how to get in. And then all of a sudden now you throw into injuries to teams like Jaren Jackson Jr., who's injured, and Ben Simmons, who's now have injuries. So you can see the impact that those players are having. So I really am enjoying how competitive the games are, because it reminds me more of like the collegiate, a tournament type feel where the games matter and every game matters. You can see, you know, I think teams, San Antonio, they're looking at teams who are losing, whose teams are winning, and they're all playing with this sense of urgency because all these teams are playing with the idea of trying to get in and be one of those eight teams that will eventually be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, when we're looking at the schedule beforehand, you have to remind yourself, all right, there's 22 teams here, 16 of these are going to be playoff teams, and then you can make the argument another two or three are clearly good enough to be in the postseason. So just about every game, every day, you're having good teams go at it. Some teams are playing to get back into rhythm. Some teams are fighting for their playoff lives. Some teams are playing the matchups and want to figure out, okay, where's the best seed for us as this moves forward? So, you know, one team that we, as we've recorded our contenders videos, they continue to come out. One team we had hopes for, but they experienced some injury unknowns at the beginning, is the Indiana Pacers. And first, there was a question around Oladipo, whether he's going to play or not. And then Sabonis, who was having an unbelievable season, he goes down. He's likely lost. So we're looking at the Pacers like, okay, well, we know they're going to be in the playoffs. We know they'll probably finish 5 or 6 in the East and be a tough first round out. But even as much as I like T.J. Warren as a player, I couldn't have seen this coming. What does that say about guys stepping up in terms of getting opportunities? But what does that also say about where offenses and defenses are here in a week after starting the bubble?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what it says about anything, because I'm not looking at traditional basketball. And I'm not sure what Fair. To make of this bubble situation and try to put what I knew then and try to put it in this situation, in this scenario, I should say. T.J. Warren, I'm putting some respect on that man's name. That's Mr.
Absolutely. Warren. Yeah, he was a bucket getter at NC State. Like, yeah, it was just a matter of time for this guy.
And you can – the thing that's been impressive about it is, okay, he has like 53 or something, and then he follows that up with like 30, and he follows it up again. And they're winning while he's scoring. So, you know, give Coach McMillan credit, give the team credit for figuring this out on the fly. And again, as when we started, you saying who's going to win it? I'm not sure. There's been a lot of surprises. I mean, you know, this kid, Michael Porter Jr. down in Denver. I mean, he comes up with 36, 37, then follows it up again with another 30. So you could see this is a new normal. There's a new way of playing. Give these coaches a lot of credit because they are – you're seeing some terrific coaching right now because why? Why do I say that? They're not in, like, great condition. We know that the defense is going to be ahead of the offense because guys can't practice, couldn't practice and do the things that they normally do. But defensively, you see the schemes and all the things that they're doing. They're doing some wonderful things to adjust. And these coaches have been magnificent. They're the best in the world. They're showing you yep. why. And it's been great. I've enjoyed it, Eric. I've enjoyed watching the games, at least on television. It has a visual that I enjoy, and I like the energy in which the guys are playing it.
100%. No travel, no outside distractions, and one day off max. So you're literally ending games, making sure guys are rested, healthy, treatment, and then you're going right to film, and you're preparing for that next opponent, and you're breaking down what you're doing. So it really is this hardcore basketball experiment where you're just living game strategy personnel around the clock, and how can you get better every day through gameplay and film to take on the next opponent and get ready for the playoffs. So in line with what you're saying, it's pretty awesome to think about just from that basketball purity standpoint.
Yeah, if you love the game, this is an opportunity for you to really consume the game and really grow, not only on the court, but off the court. And the thing that I've been most impressed with is when you become a professional, you try to eliminate all of the things that's going to get in the way so it doesn't affect what you do on the court. And out of all of the things that I've been most impressed with the NBA is the amount of detail and thought that must have gone into getting this environment to where these people can play. And play with literally no distractions. I mean, they've thought of everything. They've thought about, from how they're going to do interviews, the seating arrangement, the referees, how they're maneuvering around. The thought and detail that must have gone through, I have to commend them for that.
I mean, they're wiping down the seats in between games. They've got virtual fans piped in, family members. Like, it's awesome.
It really is. So, I think the players respect that. You know, I certainly respect, because this is very difficult, right? These young men, we can't forget that these young men and women in the WNBA are away from their families for this time. And this is a new normal. This isn't like something like you say, well, we're used to doing this or you prepare. This is kind of, we're all just kind of figuring it out. We're all figuring it out. The world is figuring it out. So for them to go down there and the NBA to maintain health and safety of all is going to be at the forefront of all of this and pull this off with the results they've gotten thus far has been nothing short of incredible. So every day is a new day, but from everything that I can see and what I've heard, it's been, it's been terrific, and I just want to commend Adam Silver and the NBA and all the people that working behind the scenes to pull this off. It's been remarkable to watch, and certainly it's been very entertaining.
So the only negative, and thankfully, the COVID tests come back, and no one has tested positive, which is great, and it speaks to everything you just said. The only negative has been some unfortunate injuries here, and we saw Jonathan Isaac go down, and you had to wonder in that moment whether he was rushed back too quickly from his prior injury, but they say they're not connected, but we wish him a speedy recovery as he's such a talented young player for the Magic. Ben Simmons, patella injury. This is going to be very tough for Philadelphia. Where does this leave the Sixers now? They sit sixth in the East. They were so excited about this strategic and positional transition with playing Ben at the power forward next to Embiid that we were seeing some flashes. Where does this leave Philly now as they try to figure out who they are going into the playoffs?
Well, the Sixers have been an enigma for a long time, and they are probably
all caps.
They're the most intriguing team to me coming down here because they've made such a drastic move, you know, and the one we're discussing here, they put Ben Simmons from the point guard, which they started the season with, so now they moved him to the power forward position. Unfortunately, he did get injured. However, you know, if there's one team that can absorb that injury and replace him with an all-star, literally, in Al Horford, who I know hasn't played well, it's been a difficult transition for him since his arrival there in Philadelphia. But, you know, I will say this, and I want to say it here. I could see them figuring it out because all of us are saying, oh, they're done. And suddenly they find some rhythm that we don't even know about. And the reason I say that is because the difference between coming off the bench and starting is huge. And the difference of knowing you're going to be able or allowed to play through your mistakes is huge for a player. And now a player like Al Horford, I can definitely see he knows he's going to have to play 30 to 35 minutes. Half of those minutes, without question, is going to be at his, I think, his natural position, the center position. Okay, he probably will play against the backup centers because Joel is going to obviously start the game. I can see him being very effective with this team, and somehow, some way, they will figure it out, provided they have no more injuries, because they can't. You know, their room for error, clearly, you know, they're going to need Joel because he can definitely carry the team on the offensive end. So, yes, you're going to lose Ben Simmons. Yes, as you advance, you don't lose a player of his caliber and expect to you know, achieve what they're looking to achieve. They feel that they have a championship caliber team. But without question, I could see them playing very well and just coming out of nowhere because – there are no expectations on him, and Al Horford now is coming into the game knowing he's going to be able to play, and I think that will do that will hit mentally. I think that will serve him well because he's been able to do that his whole career.
Sure. I'm just doing the minutes math in my head, and it's like, okay, if Embiid's playing 34 minutes at the five, that leaves 14 minutes for Al to play at the five, another 14 minutes for him at least to combo up with Embiid at the four. They just have to be really disciplined and just pound the paint. And Tobias Harris, Richardson, Milton, they got to figure something out. But it's going to be pretty ironic when the Boston Celtics end their season and they show Al Horford he made a terrible mistake last offseason.
Well, that's all I'm saying.
But that size is concerned. But when they're on the floor together,
and
they couldn't work it out.
As you know, here's the game. The regular season is one. The postseason is another. Joel Embiid, if they can play four out, one in with him,
yep,
that's going to be a problem. I don't care who you are. Because he is going to demand a double team. And if they can get consistently 35 to 40 minutes a night from him, they're going to be in the game. Just because he's going to shoot a high percentage, he's going to have to be double-teamed, and that's going to put Al Horford and Tobias Harris and all of these guys where they should shoot a high percentage, which are corner threes. Now, whether or not they have the depth and all of the other things to sustain this, you know, you just don't lose Ben Simmons and say everything's okay. But yeah,
and
they still –
defensively, it hurts them too.
But they still have a very good team, and they still are a team. They have three players – you know, I don't think Tobias has ever been an all-star, but he plays the game at a very high level, at an all-star caliber level. And when you have those type of players and you have some role players who can make plays and you can get them open shots because of the other advantages, you know what? You have to take this team seriously.
We'll see. No, I wish I had my whiteboard next to me because they should – I mean – simplify the game, right? Simplify the game and give your best player the ball in a position to succeed every time down the floor.
Well,
the post,
I wouldn't even say that
all night.
No, I wouldn't say that because the game, you can't do that in today's game because the three-point shot is a real thing now. You can't just come down and throw the ball into Joel because, you know, the other team
is
going to make threes. Yeah, the other teams are going to make threes. And if you're shooting at a high clip, right? If you're shooting at a high clip, okay, maybe that's what you want. You just want them to shoot twos. That's okay. We'll live with Joel and we'll come down and do our thing. Mathematically, you have to shoot enough threes now, the way the game is played. So again, they're going to have a delicate balance. Joel, if he's going to command those type of touches, 35, 40, 50 touches, he's going to have the balance of scoring, you know, sucking in the defense, kicking, and doing all those things. So, again, you know, Al Horford could easily make 4 or 5 threes from the corner in a game. Yep. He could easily do that as a stretch four, and he could, without question, he could do it as a stretch five. So they have weapons. Now they have to figure it out and play that delicate balance. But three-point shooting is here. Joel Embiid is – you know, we know he's a load down there if he's healthy and he can play. And, I mean, he's had a terrific bubble experience thus far. I mean, he's put up big numbers down there.
Well, a team who's faring much better in the standings, in the health column, and in the bubble are the defending champion Toronto Raptors. And that's where we're going with our guest today. BJ, so, you know, the bubble has been, A, entertaining, be insightful in terms of, okay, guys are at certain levels, teams are at certain levels, surprises, disappointments, and it's only week one. And one of the great surprises, I guess, is just how locked in the Toronto Raptors are, and it's almost like they didn't miss a beat after well over 100 days off. So we're talking Raptors today, and joining us on the Pure Hoops podcast is Ryan Wohlstadt. He's covered the Toronto Raptors since 2006 for the Toronto Sun. And it sounds like we're going to go down memory lane as well with BJ. But first, Ryan, welcome to the Pure Hoops podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, you know, first and foremost, before we jump into some specifics, what's been your first reaction to what's gone on with the bubble as a whole and how the Raptors have played into that?
I've been really impressed with everything the NBA has done and getting it up and running. And knock on wood, but it's running really smoothly. And I'm really impressed by that. The game's been fun. It takes a little of adapting to obviously get used to everything. It looks a little weird. It looks a little kind of like summer league crossed with something else. But it's just cool to have it back. I know they're working in all the virtual fans and everything. It's kind of neat. And the Raptors themselves have really just – I mean, they were rolling when things got shut down. They were one of the hottest teams in the NBA, one of the best defenses, despite having so many guys out this season. And they're finally healthy now, and they look like they haven't missed a beat.
You know, Ryan, when you watch this team, talking about the Toronto Raptors, it reminds me of a team that I played on, the 94 Bulls team, the year after Michael Jordan retired. And I just want to ask you, you're around the team every day. You cover this team. How are they doing it? Because they play with such confidence. They have terrific leadership. I'm a huge Masai fan. But how is this team, or how are they continuing to play at this level minus a player like a Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, it's kind of funny you brought up that 94 Bulls team, BJ, because I was in Chicago really early this season, I think around November, and Sam Smith, who you know well, obviously from covering you back in the day, continues to cover the Bulls, and he said, you know what, he said, this team reminds me of a team that I covered. Yeah, you know, everyone kind of wrote them off, MJ left, and it's like Kawhi leaves, and you know, he called that, Sam called that at the time. It's funny, that's exactly what happened. They just do it. They have so much depth. They have so many smart players. Obviously, Pascal Siakam taking the leap he's taken to an all-star, almost like fringe MVP candidate, has a huge amount, and you've got like Kyle Lowry, who's 6 all-star appearances, just one of the smartest players in the NBA, and then you have Marc Gasol, one of the smartest players in the league. You add that all up, and then you have, you know, OG Anunoby takes a leap. Fred VanVleet just seems to keep getting better, and right. Serge Ibaka and Norm Powell off the bench. It's like it goes on and on. It's just a really deep team, and then you have Nick Nurse, one of the best, you know, the favorite twin coach of the year, and their player development does a great job as well. So it's kind of like everything just comes together, and you just have a bunch of guys that know how to play basketball, that are talented at basketball, and just really want to win. You know, they said from the beginning of the year, we're not looking to repeat. We want to win another one. That's been their mentality from the start.
So, Ryan, with that being said, and obviously Siakam taking the leap was the first thing that needed to happen, and then all these other guys have followed suit. you just said what the team expectation was. What do you think the overall expectation was around the league of who the Raptors would be this season compared to who we're seeing they are right now?
Definitely not this. I mean, everyone said Kawhi's gone. You know, don't forget Danny Green, a really good starter, two-way player as well, left. So everyone kind of, you know, everyone thought they were still going to be a playoff team, but, and maybe if everything went right, they'd be in the mix for a home court spot, but nobody expected this. So, and the thing is, they just don't care. They didn't care what anyone was saying. That's one thing I love about this team. They just go out and play. They said, we're going to play, do the talk. And some of them, you know, last year even kind of bothered them a little bit quietly that all the attention was on Kawhi all the time. You know, don't forget, he missed a bunch of games last year, and they won like 65-70% of those games that he was out. So this is a good team already. And, you know, they love Kawhi. They'll thank him forever for winning them that title. But these guys are really confident in themselves as well. And they believe that, you know, they're obviously a huge reason why they won that title too, and why they're right back at it this year.
You know, they have one of my favorite players to watch is Fred VanVleet. You know, I just love watching him because it just doesn't add up. You know, he's not the fastest guy. He's not the quickest guy, but he just shows up in big moments. Can you talk about Fred VanVleet and also Spicy P? And what do you think Spicy P's ceiling really is? Because he seems to get better and better and better. And I'm watching him down in the bubble, and he seems to have taken another leap. I mean, he's playing point guard or point four, whatever they're doing down there with him down in the bubble. But could you talk about those two players?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I think Fred he might be my favorite guy in the whole league to talk to. He's just, you know, you're always going to get a great answer from him. He's a real one for sure. He, you know, he's seen it all. He's just, you know, he always just has great perspective on everything. I love that about him.
Is he as cool as he seems? He's
super cool. Yeah, he's super cool. And him and Pascal, you know, they're the same draft. The Raptors get Pascal late in the first round. They get Fred undrafted somehow. Like, that's – and Jakob Poeltl, too, in that draft, who they flipped in the Kawhi trade. Like, so that's as good of a draft you're going to see. But, yeah, he's just, again, one of these super smart on- and off-the-court players that they have. Good dude that just knows how to play basketball. Like, you know, he was, what, 35-0 that year at Wichita State as the leader. You know, he just knows what – doesn't matter. He might not be the fastest. You know, Nick Nurse was telling the other day, he doesn't look like it. He kind of was a backhanded compliment. He doesn't look like he's an athlete, but side to side, laterally, he's like, he's super fast. He knows all the angle. He leads the NBA in deflections. He's just a winning player. It's like Dwayne Casey said when they got him, he told a few of us, like, you know what? We kind of have a mini Kyle here, like another, like he does so many things. And he learns from Lowry, like all the tricks and how to be 6 foot and succeed in the NBA. And it's just kind of all of that. And then with Siakam, they did really, they won I can't remember who was the G League when they won, or still the D League, but they won the title that year, and they led them to that, and they just really bonded from the start and really believed in each other that they had an unlimited ceiling, and that's just what we've seen. And in terms of, you asked what's Siakam's ceiling, I don't know. When I asked him that, he said, I don't know, bro, I don't have a ceiling. He's just like, you know, like, I don't know. He started playing basketball 8 years ago, and he's already maybe All-NBA third team this year. Like, it's nuts. And most improved player, like, I don't know. Probably like a real MVP. Like I said, he's a fringe top 10 MVP candidate. I think his ceiling's probably in that mix of top 3-4 guys potentially. I don't know if he'll get there, but as a two-way player, he's phenomenal. You know, he covers as much ground as anyone probably besides Giannis in the whole NBA defensively, and then he has the whole bag of tricks offensively as well.
Ryan, you mentioned Siakam and, you know, the journey to this point. I mean, it's been this rapid progression. Obviously, he was discovered late as a teenager. Do you remember what your reaction was when you first saw the signs of this potential and what it could be?
I mean, the first time I saw him play, I was just like, wow, this guy gets up and down the floor. And I think they still had Amir Johnson at the time. And I asked him, or maybe just gone to Boston, I asked Amir, like, what he thought. He saw a little bit of him, because that was the thing that Amir made him such an effective Raptor. He just could run, and not that motor just would never stop. And that's what Dwayne Casey noticed as well when we talk about him. Like, he couldn't shoot yet. He couldn't dribble yet. You know, he didn't know exactly all the schemes defensively, but he from the start, he covered all that ground the way he does now. But you could just see, like, this guy runs harder than anyone in the league. He'll beat you down the floor, and he's, you know, like a true power forward. So I think we're just like, wow, the 27th pick late in the draft, you hope maybe you get someone who'll come off the bench. And they kind of had to start him that year because Jared Sullinger was hurt and they didn't really have anything. And you could tell he didn't really know what he was doing yet, and he had no offense to speak of besides the putbacks and just beating people down the floor. But I mean, no one saw what was coming now, but when you saw him in the G League kind of dominating down there and everything just sort of coming along, you saw how everyone would tell you how hard he worked out. You know, everyone, just about everyone in the NBA these days especially works really hard, but he like lived in the gym and was just laser focused on just becoming a do-it-all forward. One of the interesting things with him was he was always like, you know, I'm sick of people just think players from Africa can only be role players. And he's like, I don't agree with that. Like, I don't want that to be the case. Why can't we be superstars? There's Embiid from obviously Cameroon as well, a friend of his. And he's like, from the start, he didn't just want to be a role player. So I think that's, I can't say I saw anywhere near this when I first saw him, but I just noticed, it's kind of a long-winded answer, but I noticed that, yeah, he did some things you just don't see players do.
Yeah, and I think real quick, I think Hakeem Olajuwon and Dikembe Mutombo probably have something to say about guys being role players. And one more funny thing, Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger, two forwards who played with the Raptors and the Celtics who quickly lost all of their athleticism as the years went by. But BJ, back to you.
Yeah, no, I was, you know, when Coach Nurse, it's so funny for me to call him Coach Nurse because we kind of grew up together in Iowa. For many years we were there. And yeah. When he came in and, you know, I mean, he came in under such controversy, if you will. And, you know, Coach Casey, who was, he's one of my favorite people in the business. I mean, he's terrific. He's a pro's pro. I mean, he's a gentleman. And when Coach Nurse came in, what was kind of the reception up there? Because he was, because Coach Casey was just named Coach of the Year in the prior season, and then suddenly there is a transition here. What did you guys think? What was kind of the conversation? And now looking back on it, clearly, you know, he's gone on, and he was one vote away from being named also Coach of the Year. So, what has been kind of the local take up in Toronto?
Yeah, he was one vote away from his peers, and I still think the media is going to vote him Coach of the Year this year for what he did, losing Kawhi and Danny and being so good. I mean, at the time, you know, everyone loves Case. Like you said, he's such a great dude, and he led the Raptors to unprecedented heights. Like I tweeted out yesterday, they're a win away from their fifth straight 50-win season, and they hadn't won in the first 20 years. They hadn't even done that once, and a lot of that started with Case. And you know, and the fans loved him. I mean, some were frustrated because they can never get over the hump. But, I mean, running into LeBron at the peak of his powers has a lot to do with that. But, you know, it took a lot of guts for Masai and Bobby Webster to say, you know what, we've gone as far as we can go, and we're gonna do something different. Like, we really believe in Nick, and obviously he'd been there forever. Dwayne brought him in. He revitalized the offense from sort of the ISO DeMar DeRozan heavy way to the state of the art, sort of more similar to the Rockets. I mean, because obviously Nick was with Rio Grande with the Rockets, learning that system that's become kind of all the rage now. So I know, yeah, I just think it took a lot of guts for them to do that and to realize that we need to do something, we need to change it up. And then moving DeMar, obviously it couldn't just be fire the coach. They had to do something and make a blockbuster move and change up the roster, and they did it all. And I don't know how many president or general managers would have taken those drastic steps on a team that's already good enough. It won the East in the regular season. It advanced to the conference finals a few years ago. Like, it took a lot, and obviously it paid off in spades for them.
Not the same situation as Steve Kerr taking over for Mark Jackson, right? But it took guts. It took a lot of insight to make a move like that. So when that happened, what was the general feeling around the team and the fan base when, you know, you've got years of success, but know there's another level to be reached? But what was the reaction when it's Nick Nurse, who was not a household name, was identified as the guy?
From the fan base, you mean? Because the team,
yeah,
they
fan
all
base
liked it,
and just, and just yeah. different, yeah, fan base and different things you heard around Raptors culture, Raptors organization.
Yeah. In the organization, he was a great fit because he was the real players guy that, you know, he started off doing a ton of the player development with them. He was working personally with a lot of the players. And they, obviously, you guys know there's a different relationship between the assistants and the head coach just naturally. So he had to make that adjustment eventually to be the head guy again. But almost like all the players loved him. Lowry, he's been tough on coaches. He's, you know, he wants his way and he believes he's right all the time. But he was thrilled, you know, not that he didn't love Dwayne Casey. You know, they had their battles, but, you know, they're tight. But he believed it was time for a change. And basically, whatever Kyle thinks in that organization, that's what matters the most. That's going to carry the most sway. And he was on board with it, and everyone kind of followed along. And like I said, I think there was a real split in the fan base. A lot of people felt betrayed. And I don't want to like insult anyone, but maybe people that maybe don't know the full X's and O's and just in-depth basketball, just casual fans were like, how could they do this? How could you get rid of DeMar DeRozan? He's such a great guy and he loves Toronto and he's a great player, don't get me wrong. And I love dealing with DeMar from either perspective, but they were limited in how far they could go with that style of play. And as great as Dwayne is, obviously, you know, he designed the defense to stop LeBron and helped Dallas win the title. So he's a great coach as well. But at some point, you need to go in a different direction. And so I think there was a split of people that were like, how could they do this? And other people were really looking forward to seeing how they could sort of expand and change things and just continue to grow.
I'm old enough to remember when the team first came up to Toronto. And how have you seen the impact of the Raptors since winning the championship? Because now you're starting to see so many young players from Canada, in particular, Shea Alexander and Steve Nash, and the list just goes on and on. What has been the impact now with them winning a championship? I mean, when I look on television and I see Jurassic Park and I see the energy that's, I mean, it's cold out there. I mean, it's raining out there and those fans show up. It just looks awesome on television. But can you share with us kind of how the popularity of the game has grown since, the Raptors, came up and started playing?
As a guy that was always a basketball guy in a hockey country, like I played basketball, I didn't play hockey growing up. I love the NBA, and there was always a diehard group of people that loved the NBA, and obviously tons of Bulls fans, tons of Lakers fans, stuff like that, even Knicks fans as well. And but when we got a team up here, there was a lot of people that were on board, but they had to learn the game. They didn't really know. And also Vancouver got a team back then too, and that was great. That started the rise, and then you have Steve Nash doing what he did and Vince Carter's rise. Those are the two reasons you see so many kids in the NBA that are coming up and getting drafted high, like the Tristan Thompsons and the Wigginses and the Gildas Alexander and the like. But definitely as the Raptors were growing the last bunch of years into one of the best teams in the NBA, you would see more hoops on driveways and more people talking. And the thing that was interesting was you would see so much Raptors gear everywhere, and not even just in Toronto, just across the country. Like, they're Canada's only basketball team. And, you know, obviously the hockey's always going to be huge, but I swear I see more Raptors apparel than Maple Leafs by far, like, in this city. And it's been that way for a while now. And the crowds are completely different. They're way louder. They're way more into it. It's a totally different vibe. And, yeah, since they won, I think that just galvanized all of Canada and got even not just – it's not just Toronto and the rest of Ontario. It's the whole country. You know, you guys saw they held watch parties all across Canada during the finals last year. And, like, so the bandwagon just keeps growing, and I think we're going to see even more NBA and WNBA players coming from Canada because of all this.
And before I throw it back to Eric, can you give us a little story about your first fan, Mr. Drake? I mean, his reputation is growing. I mean, the camera can't get enough of him about his excitement for the game and what he's done to make the game, you know, even more popular with his excitement and love and being the first fan up there in Toronto.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt their popularity having the OVO Drake tie-in with that's part of the reason why you see so much Raptor gear, because of that tie-in and having the most popular recording artist on the planet as your super fan. I mean, that's huge. Like, look at Jack Nicholson for the Lakers and all those other super fans you've seen over the years. It's massive, and it's kind of like an advantage for them because he's there yelling at the coaches, yelling at the players. I mean, he's buddies with a lot of the players. Like, KD, he was buddies with, but he was still talking trash during the finals last year, and Steph Curry as well, their buddies. And it's just kind of like another kind of bonus advantage of having it in there. And it definitely helps him grow the brand because, as I said, he's everywhere. So if he's associating himself with the Raptors, then the people are going to think they're cool, and more people are going to kind of be interested in seeing what they're up to and giving them a chance.
Ryan, bringing it back to the bubble right now, teams are progressing differently. Raptors did something very unique before reporting there. They had their own two-week training camp in Fort Myers. How did that come about, and how much is that paying off right now with what we're seeing them do on the floor?
It came about because they have some players from all over the world. Marc Gasol was home in Spain. They had some other players. They had a bunch of players in the States. They had a few guys like Serge Ibaka and I think OG Anunoby working in Siakam in Canada due to like visa and passport issues and stuff. It just would have been kind of difficult with quarantines and everything to get them to come back, report to camp in Toronto, do all that, and then head down to Florida. Just didn't make sense as the only Canadian team. There's just a few extra hurdles you have to jump across, especially during a global pandemic. So they just thought it'd be a lot easier. I mean, there's some talk maybe going to Buffalo, doing it there, but they just decided, let's just get down to Florida, safe part of Florida down there. The Florida Gulf Coast University people were great with them. They gave them the space and made sure everything was going to be really safe for them.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I got to put you on the spot. You know, I don't want to underestimate the heart of a champion. When I watch this Raptor team, I'm not betting against them. What? That's going to be a tough out. What are you really expecting from this group? Like, you're here, you've watched them, you've followed them all year, you've seen this group. We know their basketball integrity is there. What are you really expecting here in the bubble? Because I'm never betting against this team. If they came out of the East and won the championship this year, it wouldn't surprise me, because this group is, I mean, watching them play the other night, I guess, against the Lakers. I mean,
yeah,
defensively what they did. I mean, they're just terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be boring and kind of just go along with what you're saying, but I don't know how you bet against what Nick Nurse has done. He's had success all over the world, won the G League a couple of times, or D League back then, wins the NBA championship his first year, as one of the best offenses and defenses in the NBA, both of his first 2 years coaching. Then you have the guys like, I don't know how you bet against Kyle Lowry with that heart and that will and those smarts. Fred VanVleet is like one of the most winningest players when you look at every level ever in the history of basketball. Like, he just wins. You get Gasol, you know, it's tough. Like, I could see them easily winning. I could see them losing because they don't have a Giannis. They don't have a Kawhi. They don't have a LeBron, as good as these other guys are.
Right.
You know, the NBA, it's, you need that lead dog almost always. There's exceptions with Pistons. You know, when they were stacked, this team reminds me of that Pistons team as well, that kind of used everyone and got it done. But, like, I agree, BJ, I wouldn't count them out. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they lose to Milwaukee, because Milwaukee's really, really good, and Bud's a really good coach, and Giannis, I just don't know what you do against him, although mm-hmm. they have teams that have better answers than a lot of other teams. But I definitely think they're going to make the Eastern Finals, I'll say that, and then we'll see what happens after that.
So we could see a Boston Celtics...
I knew it. Boston was coming in here. You know,
second
like,
round.
Coming from the guy who proclaimed Jason Tatum is going to be MVP next season, my partner, BJ.
Next season? We're talking about this season.
But
I'm high on Tatum, too.
I love the thought of the chess match with both teams, because both have some glaring strengths. There's a few little weaknesses in certain places. Obviously, Toronto has a major front court advantage on paper over the Celtics, but the Celtic wing versatility is something that I think could give Toronto problems. Ryan, from your view, what challenges do the Celtics give the Raptors in a potential second round matchup?
I think if they were fully healthy, that would be an awesome series. I'm not sure with what's going on with Kemba. Like, he kills them. I mean, Lowry lights them up too, so it's kind of like an old fashion point guard shoot out there between those two guys. But with Kemba a little dicey with whatever's going on with him, I don't know. Like, I feel like Toronto would win that series, but I'm with you on, I think Tatum is as good as Siakam is, as good as Lowry is. I think Tatum's the best player on either team, and he has the highest ceiling. He's a lot younger than Siakam, for one thing. You know, I think OG Anunoby was actually a buddy of Tatum's, because they're both from, I think they played AAU together in Missouri. I think he has a huge ceiling, but not quite that Tatum or maybe even Jaylen Brown ceiling. But I think people have been waiting, Celtics and Raptor fans have been waiting to see them play in the playoffs for years. They've been two of the best teams with Cleveland when LeBron was there in the East for years now, and we never got the series. So I think we definitely want to see that second round series, but I kind of wish that Kemba was 100%, because then I don't know who I would pick. It would be really a real pick, and I think, but the way things are now, I really like that front court. I just don't know what they're going to do. If Gasol, you know, it depends how he's feeling. He doesn't always, you know, he doesn't like to be that Memphis Gasol, the bully ball Gasol. He kind of takes it easy and passes. But if he really asserts himself, I'm not sure what Boston does with him. And even Ibaka has been great the last couple of years as well. I'm not sure he's lifting the Celtics up as well.
Ibaka has been fantastic. The Celtics somehow are getting it done with that just center by committee. the hope with Kemba is they're easing him back in. They're trying to strengthen his knee to where he can get back to 30 minutes a game. Where the Celtics' real advantage is against anybody is the fact that you have Tatum, Brown, and Hayward all playing at a very high level right now at that wing position. So I would love to see the series. It's long overdue. And ironically, with your history in basketball, being from Toronto and loving the 90s Bulls, BJ Ryan's going to participate with us today in our favorite old school segment. So we're going to go back to the 90s.
Back to the 90s we go.
And I got to ask, Ryan.
I love the 90s.
We haven't delved into this too much on the show before. BJ and I have talked about it a little bit, just you know, as we've been building over the last year plus. But the expansion draft for the Raptors, BJ Armstrong could have become a Toronto Raptor. He ends up going out to the Bay to the Warriors. So what was your experience like as a young basketball camp thinking, oh my goodness, we may get three-time champion, all-star point guard BJ Armstrong, and then like that, he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, as a longtime Bulls fan since the 80s, I was hyped. I was like, yeah, sweet, all right. BJ's coming to Toronto. That's a nice start. We'll see what else they get. But I thought that would have been really good. But, you know, and then when it didn't happen, I was like, oh, that sucks. But, you know, they'll move from there. It's kind of funny. It started the trend of a few guys not coming to Toronto that you thought maybe. I mean, there's Kenny Anderson.
Right.
Got traded for Damon Stoudemire and didn't come. Alonzo Mourning in the Vince Carter trade would have maybe made the Vince trade passable instead of the worst trade in NBA history, but he didn't come, so it was kind of funny. It started the trend there, but it's too bad. It would have been fun. Like, I know Brendan Malone, obviously from your rival team, the Pistons, but he's a great coach, and he really had that team rolling. So, I mean, it would have been fun, but, you know, things didn't happen that way, but eventually the Raptors figured things out. It took them a few years, but they have it rolling now.
BJ, how strange of a time was that for you in your career and expansion draft, having to figure out, okay, what's the next chapter in my career after the success in Chicago and then having to make a decision like that?
Yeah, well, it was a different time. And, you know, that was they were an expansion team. And clearly when you're an expansion team, you're literally starting from ground zero. And, you know, coming and kind of being in the thick of my career at that particular time, you know, you understand where everyone was at. So if given an opportunity, you know, I remember I came up there and I remember when I visited the city, I was so impressed with the team, the organization, the things they were doing. I think at the time, I think they used to play in the dome,
if I remember. Dome. Yeah,
in the Sky Dome.
It was awful.
It was very impressive. Yeah, it was impressive how it just all kind of came together. And I just remember you could see the potential. And even though it was, you know, hockey country, you could see the potential of the growth of the game. I remember walking around the city. But nonetheless, I was just in a different space in my career at that time. And now to see it now and see where they've come, and now it's a destination. I mean, you know, Toronto is, if you ask players now, one of their favorite places to visit, you know, without question, Toronto is right up there. So I wish I would have the opportunity to play up there. It's great. And I was really rooting for them just because I've known what they've gone through. Of growing, of starting something from the ground and seeing it to where it's at now. They have a wonderful practice facility. The new arena is up there, and the supports of the fan, it's right up there with the best of the best in the NBA.
How weird would it have been to play after all those battles with Isaiah on the team that he was running, if it would happen?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I'm from Detroit, so I remember when Isaiah first came to Detroit. But I remember when Isaiah first came to Detroit. So, yeah, he is my guy. And so that wasn't – I've known Isaiah since I was in high school. And so that wasn't weird at all. What was difficult was knowing that was my guy and the relationship that I had, obviously playing against him so many years and playoff series and all those things, and knowing kind of where we were both at, you know, in the spectrum of like where we're at in our careers and what he was trying to do up there. But I remember Daryl Walker and all of the guys that were up there, And they were excited about it. And I was excited for them. But at that time, I was just, you know, I was where I was at. They were where they're at. And, you know, that's the part of sports where you try to match where everyone's at when you have a, you know, you're trying to build a team.
Yeah. Good stuff, fellas. Good stuff. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. This was great. We'll check in again, hopefully when the Celtics are up 3-2 on the Raptors, ready to close it out in six in the second round. But stay healthy, stay safe, keep enjoying the ball, and thank you for being a guest with us today. This was terrific.
Yeah, for sure. Same to you guys. Thanks a lot for having me. That was a lot of fun.
All right. Take care. Thanks, buddy. Stay safe.
All right. You too. Take care, guys.
Special thanks again to Ryan Wohlstadt from the Toronto Sun. And any guy that remembers the 95 expansion draft like he does can show up on our show any day. So, BJ, fun talking Raptors, and incredible the history you have with Coach Nick Nurse and the insights you have to his basketball journey in that team. So we've got to keep an eye on the Raptors, keep an eye on all this action. But great show today, my man.
Absolutely, and looking forward to it. You know, those guys in Toronto play a good brand of basketball. I'm looking forward to the rest of the bubble experience.
Yeah, just do me a favor next week when you're doing TV and you got the jacket and the collar on, just shoot me a text ahead of time so I'm not in gym gear again, okay?
We'll
appreciate
do
that. I'm trying to get into pre-playoff shape over here. I need the notification. That's all for today, the Pure Hoops podcast. We hope you enjoy the weekend ahead of NBA action. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show each and every Monday. Full Court Press with Fanta and Adams each Tuesday, delving into college basketball. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Aaron Berlin and Otto Strong on Wednesdays. Monica McNutt and King McClure bring you Buckets, Boards, and Blocks on Thursdays. And BJ and I come back on Fridays with the Pure Hoops podcast. Please check out all of our shows. Download, rate, review. Please subscribe. Most importantly, enjoy. And of course, stay pure.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.